Well, as we pick up this week, we're in chapter 3 of Daniel. Chapter 3 of Daniel. The year is 585 B.C. And Nebuchadnezzar, it's been 20 years since Nebuchadnezzar installed Daniel as the second in charge of his kingdom. Now remember, Daniel is Jewish. Daniel is from the southern kingdom. Daniel is not Babylonian. And yet now he is second in charge of the entire kingdom, the Babylonian kingdom, the first greatest kingdom of the world that controlled the most land of any kingdom before. And so Daniel is the second in command. Nebuchadnezzar has returned from capturing lands. He spent 20 years out capturing lands. Now listen, you'll see footnote 18. Footnote 18, if we go back to 2 Kings, 2 Chronicles, and a bunch of the chapters in Jeremiah, you see those in footnote 18. That is all history. And when we read that history, that is all history about Nebuchadnezzar. And we know because of the internal evidence inside of these chapters in 2 Kings, 2 Chronicles, and Jeremiah, that Nebuchadnezzar is gone for the better part of 20 years from his capital city. Well, who's running the capital city? It's not a Babylonian. It's Daniel. Who's running the kingdom for this 20 years? It's not a Babylonian. It's Daniel. He's over there, and they're building great palaces. They're building statues. They're building images. They're building monuments all across the Babylonian Empire as Nebuchadnezzar is out with his chief leader of his army. His name is Nebuzaradan. They're out capturing lands. They're capturing more of Egypt. They're capturing out what we would call today Algeria. They're capturing what we would call Ethiopia. They're capturing what we would call today Turkey. They're capturing what we would call today Greece and Macedonia and Rome. They're capturing all this land area for Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom. They're also capturing what we would call Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan, all that area, the parts north, even up into Georgia and parts of what we would call Russia today. Nebuchadnezzar and Nebuzaradan are capturing these lands. And if you go back and read in these chapters, we know that this is where Nebuchadnezzar is. And the buildings that are happening in this first 20 years of Nebuchadnezzar's reign while he's even off conquering lands is just incredible. The palace in Babylon was just an incredible palace. In the center of this palace was a banquet room that would hold about 1,000 people. Attached to that was a throne room for Nebuchadnezzar, and of course Nebuchadnezzar had an office there as well as his living quarters inside of this palace. Then there was a section of offices that went around all of that area, which Daniel's office would have been there according to archaeology and Babylonian records. There were Daniel's office would be there as well as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's offices and some of the other offices. And then there was another layer around that and another layer of offices. You truly had to go through a whole bunch of offices down hallways to get to these banquet areas. And attached to all of this palace is this wonderful thing that is called the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. There is so much credence to this information that they called the Hanging Gardens of Babylon one of the seven ancient wonders of the world. Amazing. Just amazing. Did Nebuchadnezzar build this? No, he might have thought it up, but guess who built it? Well, we don't know if Daniel built it or not. But we do know that it could not have happened without Daniel's knowledge. Why? Because Daniel is second in command. And who's third in command? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are third in command, right underneath Daniel. And then it splits off even more and even more. And in every land, in every country that Nebuchadnezzar had conquered, there were people there who were from that country that he conquered who were put in charge underneath Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and underneath Daniel, which would be underneath Nebuchadnezzar. Well, finally, at the end of 585 B.C., Nebuchadnezzar has conquered just about everything that there is to conquer, and he returns back to Babylon to enjoy his city life. And in fact, just a couple of years after this, which we're going to see in next week's lesson, he's going to go out on his balcony and he's going to look at everything that he has seen and what he, quote, has built by his own hands. And it's not going to be a very good time for him, because God is going to say, you didn't do this. I allow this to be done for you because I am the one who built your kingdom, not you. Last week's lesson, we saw that God, Daniel tells Nebuchadnezzar that God is the one who has given to him every person, every bird, every animal, everything that he will come in contact with. Those things are to be under his command, under his leadership, given to him to be part of his empire by God. Nebuchadnezzar is anointed for that purpose. Well, now we're in chapter 3, though. So Nebuchadnezzar has just arrived back in his land, and there has been an image that has been built, an image. Well, let me take you back just 1 year before all this happens. What happened just the year before this? The last thing that Nebuchadnezzar had to get hold of that was in rebellion to him was Jerusalem. 586 BC, just the year before, Nebuchadnezzar had to make his last stand in Jerusalem. For a bit of time, Zedekiah had been rebelling against Nebuchadnezzar, and when rebellion happens in leadership, you have to go get it under control. You cannot let it just continue to fester. So Nebuchadnezzar went to Jerusalem to get it under control. And for several months, he tried to get Zedekiah to come under his thumb and be under his leadership. Zedekiah refused. Finally, on Sunday morning, August the 5th, of 586 B.C., Nebuzaradan, the chief bodyguard and leader of the army of Nebuchadnezzar, breached through the walls of Jerusalem. Sunday morning, August the 5th, 586 B.C. Zedekiah and some of his family, and all of his family, in fact, and his chief people around him escaped through a hole that had been busted in one of the gates. And they tried to escape, but they did not get very far. They were captured by Nebuzaradan and taken up to Riblah, where Nebuchadnezzar was staying, which is not very far up the road from Jerusalem. And there, Nebuchadnezzar took Zedekiah, and he stood him up in chains, and he killed all of Zedekiah's sons. He killed all of Zedekiah's family. He killed all of Zedekiah's officers, and he killed all of Zedekiah's chief warriors. You see, Ezekiel had prophesied to Zedekiah that he would not see Babylon. Jeremiah had prophesied to Zedekiah that he would go to Babylon. Now, we got a problem here. Zedekiah was arrogant. He said, because Ezekiel and Jeremiah have a conflicting prophecy, one says that I will not see Babylon, and the other says that I will go to Babylon. One of the two guys is wrong, and I do not believe God is in favor of Nebuchadnezzar coming and taking over the kingdom. Even though Jeremiah is saying, get ready, today's the day, here they're coming, by tomorrow it's going to happen. Sure enough, Zedekiah is there at Riblah. They kill all of his family, they kill all of his household, and then they put out Zedekiah's eyes, and Nebuchadnezzar takes Zedekiah on to Babylon, fulfilling both prophecies. Isn't that wonderful how God is? You just think that God is wrong and God is right. Because Zedekiah did not see Babylon, even though he went to Babylon fulfilling both prophecies. Well, Nebuchadnezzar has landed back in Jerusalem. And here we pick up with verse 1 of chapter 3. Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold, the height of which was 60 cubits, and its width was 6 cubits, and he set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Now listen here, Daniel has been in charge of everything, so surely Daniel knew this image was being built. The interesting thing about this is, what was this image? Was this image, I did not get to make my big ones, so you're going to have to accept with the small ones. Was this image of gold, of image of the statue that he had seen in his dream 20 years before, and we read studied about in the last chapter, was it an image of him? Was it that? Or was it an image more like this? These were all over the place. This happens to be an Egyptian one, but the Babylonians had them the same way. Israel had them the same way. Do you know what most of these represented throughout the world in history and throughout all the different cultures? These were images also associated with what was called the Asherah pole in the Bible. These were sexual symbols to the sex god. Okay? So what is this image? Do not know. Have no idea. What's interesting about these, almost all of these that are built, the four corners point exactly to north, south, east, and west of each of these. My question is because why, and you say, why do you think it's not the image of a statue like Nebuchadnezzar and more like this? Here's the reason why. In the previous chapter, just a few verses before, they talk about it being a statue. In his dream, he sees a statue. If it was a statue, why doesn't that same terminology go down into chapter 3, just a few verses later? Because remember, there's no chapter breaks in Daniel. We put those chapter breaks in, and well, we didn't, but somebody did, some in 1450, about 1450 AD, just 600 years ago, somebody put the chapter breaks in, and 100 years later, somebody put the verse breaks in. So this was just a story. Why would the recorder, the author who's writing this, call it a statue in one chapter and just a few verses later call it an image? Because it probably was an image. It probably was an image that had carvings on it of some sort. But we're also going to find something else. Out on the plain of Dur. Now, the plain of Dur is just outside of Babylon. And if you would go there today, there's not much there, but there are mounds that have been discovered that are very strong. They have been fortified to where they know that many of these statues, these images, and other things have been there. They know that something has been there that's been tall and strong or whatever. How tall is this statue? It's 60 cubits by 6 cubits. That means it is 100 feet tall by 10 feet wide. Now, how far is a cubic? The regular, ordinary cubic. And I had to even check this out. So I said, Sam Davis, do you have a tape measure? Because I didn't have mine. He went out in his car. And I said, okay, Sam, measure from my elbow to the tip of my middle finger. Do you know how long that is? It is 20 inches. It is 20. And a short cubic on the average man is 17. The short cubic goes from the elbow to just at the place where the middle finger picks up. It's, you know how far mine is? 17 inches. So I guess I'm an average man. Some of you little short guys, we're going to have to measure y'all to see if your hand, I think it's the same. I think it's just about the same. So we turned around, we measured Sam. Guess what? Sam's 20 inches on the long and 17 on the short. This was probably done by the ordinary cubic because it's not, God has no indication in Scripture that it was a short cubic. And so this was this image was 100 feet tall and 10 feet wide. Therefore, it would be very difficult to make an image like this 100 feet tall and 10 feet wide. Very difficult to stand it up. 100 feet. You know our cross that we have outside is 170 feet. Take off the top part, take off the bar, and come down about 6 feet, and you got 70 feet right there. It is still a long ways up to the cross piece of the bar. So, but this would be much easier to stand up. And it's just an image. It doesn't say it's a statue. It's just an image of something that is up there. All right, picking up and go on. Verse 2. Then Nebuchadnezzar, the king, sent word to assemble the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the rulers of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar, the king, has set up or had set up. All you government officials, notice this. Did he call for the people of the provinces? No. Did he call for the people of Babylon? No. Did he call for the Jews of exile? No. He called for the seven layers of his leadership government organization. This is like the President of the United States saying, okay, I want all the heads of state. I want all the secretaries of state. I want all the governors. I want all the mayors of all the city. I want you to all come. We have built the George Washington Monument, and we're going to dedicate this monument. You got that? It's not ordinary people. It's the people of leadership. And he says to them, then the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the rulers of the provinces were assembled for the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. So they come for a dedication. That's what they've come for. Now, let me help you here. What were those Babylonian offices? Here we go. Satraps. Well, you could put out their governors. Rick Perry, Rubinet, just what are the governors' names? Got that? governors, prefects. These are the rulers who are over the wise men. These would be like your state university presidents over your wise men. Your governors, that's like your mayors of each city. Even though it's governor, we think that'd be like the governor of state. No, in their government, the governors were like mayors. The counselors were like lawyers. The treasurers were treasurers. It's the only one of the bunch that matches up with ours. Judges were like sheriffs, and magistrates were like judges. So that's where we get, when we talk about judges down at the court, our magistrates, especially in British thinking, our magistrates, those are the judges. And the actual judges in Babylon were sheriffs. They're the ones that carry the six shooters on the side. They did not have six shooters then. That is a joke. You're supposed to laugh. Well, you laughed when I finally told you to laugh. That's good. You're following good leadership. Verse 4, then the herald loudly proclaimed. Here's what the herald says. To you the command is given, O people, nations, and men of every language. You got to understand, there are men of every language and every nation that is under Nebuchadnezzar's control there. This was not a quick deal where he says, okay, everybody show up tomorrow. We're going to have a dedication. No, this took some time for them to send out word in every person in the government that was under the control, and they were leadership under Nebuchadnezzar had to come and be at this meeting to have a dedication of whatever this image was, that we don't know what it was, but someday when we all get to heaven, we'll know what it was. They had to be there to dedicate it. The command goes on in verse 5, that at the moment you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the trigon, the psaltery, the bagpipe, and all kinds of music, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar, the king, has set up. But whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast into the midst of a furnace of blazing fire. So when the musical racket starts, you're supposed to fall down on your knees in dedication to this image that is out there, whatever the image is. And the king, if this is his command, this herald who is proclaiming it, so he's the one who is saying it instead of the king, that he's given you a choice. You've got a choice. You can either bend down or you can burn. So, the question is, where would you stand in this? Verse 7, therefore, at the time when all the people heard the sound of the horn, the flute, the lyre, the psaltery, the trigon, missed that one, the bagpipe, and all kinds of music, all the people, nations, and men of every language fell down and worshiped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Well, what would you do? You had two choices. You could either bend or you could burn, one of the two. And so at the command, all the leadership, well, not quite all the leadership, bowed down in homage and dedication, which is another thing we would call like a worship to this image. For this reason, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and brought charges against the Jews. Chaldeans. Remember the Chaldeans from our first lesson, chapter 1? Chaldeans were the teachers. They were the teachers of the wise men. They were the teachers of the magicians, teaching the magical arts. They were the teachers of the conjurers, teaching about spells. They were the teachers of the sorcerers, ones who did the horoscopes, the eye of this and toad of that and all that type of stuff, of all these different spells and the herbs that they would bring in to make different types of medicines. They were the wise men, the doctors, and all this. The Chaldeans. You know, back in chapter 1, 20 years before this, Daniel, there was a mess going on because Nebuchadnezzar had a dream. And in that dream, it disturbed him greatly. And so word went out for the Chaldeans to come see Nebuchadnezzar. And he says to you, Nebuchadnezzar says, I want you to tell me the dream, and I want you to tell me the interpretation. And none of the Chaldeans could do it. So they said, hey, you tell us the dream, and we'll tell you the interpretation. Nebuchadnezzar got very mad at that. He said, if you do not tell me that, I know you're trying to stall. If you do not tell me the dream and its interpretation, I'm going to have you torn limb from limb and your houses will be torn down into a heap of rubbish. And so it's urgent, and they cannot tell him. And so Nebuchadnezzar has his soldiers go to kill every wise man, and they end up trying to find Daniel, Shadrach, and Abednego also to kill them because they're in training to be wise men. And Daniel, in his wonderful way, the way he was, he goes and says, "Can I speak? Can I speak to Nebuchadnezzar? Nebuchadnezzar, can you give me just a little while so that I can determine what your dream was and give you the interpretation?" And Nebuchadnezzar heard him and gave him some time. Daniel says, "What's the hurry? What's the urgency?" Well, he finally gets the answer to what he's asking. God reveals to him the dream and the interpretation. And he goes back and he says, "Oh, King Nebuchadnezzar, please do not continue killing the Chaldeans." Daniel should have kept his mouth shut. Because here we are 20 years later, and it's the Chaldeans who are going, "Nanny, nanny, boo, boo, they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing." I'll show you to you. Okay. "For this reason, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and brought charges against the Jews." Why are these Chaldeans bringing charges against the Jews? Because Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and Daniel are in charge of these Chaldeans. They're the bosses of these Chaldeans. And in every organization where you have people like this, like these Chaldeans who are in leadership position, there's always some of those who have a difficulty with authority. And they do not like these Jews being over them. "They responded and said to Nebuchadnezzar the king, 'O king, live forever.'" Or that's just like saying, "Long live the king, king. 'You yourself, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, the flute, the lyre, the trigon, the psaltery, the bagpipe, and all kinds of music is to fall down and to worship the golden image. But whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the midst of the furnace of blazing fire.'" Just want to tell you, Nebuchadnezzar, verse 12, just want to tell you, I'm adding that. "There are certain Jews from whom you have appointed over the administration of the province." It's been 20 years. They still got an itch in their craw because these Jews have been appointed over them in their administration. By the way, Daniel asked for that to happen, and Nebuchadnezzar agreed to it. "Namely, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have disregarded you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image which you have set up." Now, what I want to know is, how did these Chaldeans know that they had not done this? Had they peaked? They were supposed to be on their knees. Have you ever peaked in a worship service? David Dunn, our projector guy here, video photographer, and I used to sing in the choir at First Baptist Waxahachie. That would be First Baptist Waxahachie, okay? First. And we'd have revival preachers come in. And we're singing in the choir, "Just as I am." And the preacher would ask for all heads to be bowed and every eye closed. "And if you wanted to give your life to the Lord, would you just raise your hand?" I couldn't help myself. I'm looking. And I knew what was coming next. The preacher would say, "Yes, there are hands all over the auditorium at this time." I'm looking. There aren't any hands up out there. You know what I remember, Dave? No hands out there. And you want to go, "There ain't no hands out there." And then they'd say, "If you've raised your hand even in your heart, won't you step right out of that aisle and come down and take the hand of our pastor? Brother Tulloch's waiting down here for you to come and give your heart to the Lord. And like a tree that's planted by the water, no one moved." Y'all know that song? "I shall not be, I shall not be moved. I shall not be, I shall not be moved. Just like a tree that's planted by the water, I shall not be moved." Why do they sing that as an invitation song? But they did. Why were these Chaldeans peeking? Oh, they wanted their bosses in trouble. I'm sure Nebuchadnezzar said, bring them to me. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego show up. These Chaldeans are back in the back going, nanny, nanny, boo, boo. Do they say nanny, nanny, boo, boo now? Is that still said? Nanny, 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 nanny. Okay. Verse 13, then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and anger, gave orders to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then these men were brought before the king. Now remember, Nebuchadnezzar's been in rage. When somebody tells you something that you know they have defied as a parent, somebody tells you something your kid has done, didn't you just inside? I'm sure Nebuchadnezzar did, but these guys are the third in line of leadership. It's a Babylonian, then a Jew by the name of David, then three Jews by the name of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, then come all the other Babylonians. There's a buffer between the king and the other Babylonians in this leadership. Huh. Nebuchadnezzar responded to them, and because of something that's going to be said later on, I don't think he said to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Listen, he knew these guys. He had to know these guys. My question is did he come and say, is it true? No, I don't think he did that. I think he said this. I think he said it like this. Is it true, Shadrach? Is it true, Meshach? Is it true, Abednego, that you did not serve my God or worship the golden image that I have set up? Is it true? These guys have run his kingdom for 20 years. Is it true? Is this the first time he's had to say something to these guys? Is it true? My question is where's Daniel in all this?
He was in back where they couldn't see.
He was in back? I don't think he was there. He had to be somewhere else taking care of some other business. But anyway, no, they didn't. The Chaldeans would have loved to have gotten Daniel also, just as much. But thank you for that, Bill. That's deep theology coming from over there on that side of the room. Is it true? Now, Nebuchadnezzar, they don't answer him yet. And they said, now, if you are ready, Nebuchadnezzar says, at the moment that you hear the sound of the horn, you hear the flute, the lyre, the trigon, the psaltery, the bagpipe, and all kinds of music, to fall down and worship the image that I've made, very well. If you're ready, we'll get it done. But if you do not worship, you will immediately be cast into the midst of a furnace of blazing fire. And what God is there who can deliver you out of my hands? You see what's happening here? Nebuchadnezzar is giving them a second chance. Why is he giving them a second chance? He had already given the orders because he's had a relationship with them. The kingdom is huge because of them and their boss, Daniel. Everything was always in order when Nebuchadnezzar returned home from a campaign. Everything was ready for him to charge the men and gather supplies and head back out for another campaign in a different direction because of these men. They were trusted men. They had to be because of where they were in the leadership in the organization. Oh, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had not learned from their leader Daniel very well. In chapter 1, when Daniel found out that there was a dream that needed to be chapter 1, when they found out, that the king wanted them to eat the meat and drink the wine that it was at his table that had been offered to the false gods. Daniel said, can we try to do this a little different and just see if it works better? Instead of eating that meat that's been offered to idols, can we eat vegetables instead? Arioch says, oh no, I'll put my head on the line if you look haggard and bad. And Daniel says, can we just try it for 10 days? 10 days. Daniel had a diplomatic way of working things out. He never was defiant and rebellious. In chapter 2, when it comes up to the king's dream, a while ago I said chapter 1, but it was chapter 2, about the image of gold with the head of gold, what we studied last week. Daniel says, can I go speak to the king and ask him for a little time? Daniel always did it right. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are fixing to sin. They're not going to do it right. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to give you an answer concerning this matter. Wrong. Anytime the leader, especially the ordained leader, asks you a question, you give an answer. You know, I've really only had two secretaries in 20 years. One's Kay Bass, who we pushed on up to be Jim Green's secretary, and the other's Sally Hecker. And with both of them, I always had to go through a little training time. And it always happened when Brother John called and asked, what have we done for a family? We never tell Brother John anything unless he asks. It's just best. Because he doesn't need to know all of the mud that we trample through. And with both of them, when Beverly called over, they were shuddering in their boots. Kay came in, I'll never forget it, Kay Bass. Jim, Brother John's called through Beverly and they want to know what we've done for so-and-so. Okay, get the file and show it to them. Because we have an electronic file and we have a hard copy file. You mean we should just show it to him? Yes, he's the boss. Show it to them. If he asks, give it to them. But should I ask you first? No. Give it to them. We have nothing to hide. Everything is documented. Every I is dotted. Every T is crossed. Hand them the folder if they want it. Comes again. Sally's my secretary. Comes in. I think it's 6 or 8 years ago now, 10 years, 9 years ago, something like that. Brother John's called and Beverly wants to know, like, oh, I'm going to ask you before I give it to him. No, Sally, give it to him. Isn't there anything you want to look at first? No, I don't want to look at it first. If they want to know, they're the boss. I may be responsible for what I do in my office, but they are 100% responsible for what I do in my office. Do you understand that? Leadership. For Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to say, we have no reason and no need to give you an answer concerning this matter, that is just wrong. Just wrong. One of the words in Hebrew and in Greek, and I'm not going to tell you what the two words are, but they both mean a sin. You know, one of the things that we say, a sin is missing the mark. Well, there are 13 other words that are translated sin in both the Hebrew and the Greek. 13 more Hebrew words and 13 more Greek words. Missing the mark is where you got your bullseye up here and you're shooting at the bullseye, but it goes over here and doesn't even hit the page. And that's missing the mark. But there's another one that is called sin. It's where you hit dead center in the middle of the mark, which we would say, hey, that's a 10-pointer right there, that one. But the problem is the arrow was shot so hard that it went right through the target and went on to do damage past it. You follow me? And that's a sin. It's not a sin to hit the mark. It's a sin to grab what you have hit and to push it on and sin with what you've hit by hitting something else. And that's what Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are fixing to do. We do not need to give you an answer concerning this matter. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the furnace of blazing fire, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But even if he does not, they would have been fine right down to that point for all practical purposes. But here it is. But even if he does not, let it be known to you, O king, that we are not going to serve your gods and worship the golden image that you have set up. Why? Because it's against what they learned. It's against the Mosaic law. It's against the God that they worship. But they're flaunting it in the face of the image. I mean, face of Nebuchadnezzar. Had they just said, Nebuchadnezzar, it's against what we believe. It's against our God to bow down to the image. Nebuchadnezzar probably would have listened to them. But no, they are violating his command and they are blatantly arrogant about that. Had Daniel been there, Daniel would have been able to say, Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. We cannot bow at this image because this is against what we believe. And Nebuchadnezzar would have continued in the dialogue and he would have understood. No, these three boys that are now almost 40 years old are blatantly arrogant towards their boss. Sad part about that is, in reading the rest of the story, we miss that many times because the rest of the story, the boys end up, the 40-year-old boys, end up okay. But remember this. God can take your sin that you did and he can use it for his good because he's got a better purpose here. He's trying to get Nebuchadnezzar where he wants Nebuchadnezzar to be with him. And Nebuchadnezzar's fixing to get there pretty quick. After another 8 years at least, after this, after we get past the next chapter, Nebuchadnezzar's finally going to learn his lesson. But here, he's still in the process. So Nebuchadnezzar, it says in verse 19, was filled with wrath, and his facial expression was altered towards Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I don't think there's a person in this room who has not seen that on your parents' face. Now, some of you are going to have to go back a decade or so to remember your parents' face. Your parents' face are looking at you and they're just sweet and they're kind and they're asking you a question. And then you see all the joy just drain out of their face. And you know you are in trouble. All of you remember that? Y'all remember how you disappointed your parents? Where they went from laughing and having fun to you're grounded. All within 60 seconds. Do what? What'd you say, Paul? Oh, right to the belt. Yes. Oh, that's good. I didn't say that. He did. Then Nebuchadnezzar was filled with wrath, and his facial expression was altered towards Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. That's the reason why I said back a while ago, I think he probably said to them, is it true? He didn't say, is it true? He said, "Is it? It's not what you say, it's how you say it." You know what I mean? His facial expression is altered. He answered by giving orders to heat the furnace seven times more than it was usually heated. And he commanded certain valiant men, warriors, who were in his army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and to order to cast them in the furnace of blazing fire. I have some questions. And I don't have the answers. But there are a lot of questions. Number one. What did they have a furnace this big for? It big enough to throw three men into it. What was a furnace for like that? Number two, how did they know it was seven times hotter? I actually know that answer. That's a pretty easy answer. You see, they've been doing metal work for a long, long time. Even 1,000 years before when we had them coming out of Egypt, the chariots of Egypt had iron and stuff on. So they already knew gold melts at a certain level, silver melts at a certain level, iron ore melts at a certain level. So seven times, they knew the progression of metal and when it melted. They knew that. So, but how did they get the oxygen to this furnace to heat it up? Because in order to get it that hot, you got to keep pumping oxygen into it like with bellows. Central Presbyterian Church in Waxahachie is an interesting church. Underneath the stage, there are two bellows for the pipe organ. And those two bellows is two rooms. And those two rooms together are about the size of this room. And they're down underneath the bottom. And you have to walk all around. But they have this gorgeous pipe organ. And there's one bellow that handles one side and the other. And the room's not quite this high. It's only about this high. But it's this big an area. Split it down the middle. You'll walk into one or walk into the other. And that thing has leather, calf leather is what is on the sides. And that thing is this. Of course, it's run by motors. They didn't have motors in this day. So this means humans were having to pump those bellows to get enough wind going through to get that fire hot. Hot. And how long did it take them to get there? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego tied up for a while they wait? Where is this furnace? How far is this? Is this furnace built with fire brick of some sort? It's been heated. We don't know. We don't know. We'll find those answers. All I know is that the king is not going to take any orders from his subordinates, and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are out of line. And he's given them a second chance. Yeah, he's given them a second chance, and they've defied him. So they heat up the furnace 7 times hotter than normal. And lo and behold, look what happens. Then these men were tied up in their trousers, their coats, their caps, and their other clothes, and were cast into the midst of the furnace of blazing fire. For this reason, because the king's command was urgent, the furnace had been made extremely hot. The flames of the fire slew those men who carried Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Whoa. Now listen. In our last class, we have firefighters in that last class. And they know there are things that they know not to do. They know that whenever you open the doors to a furnace that has been made very, very hot, you better be out of the way, because the heat from that furnace that will come out, number one, will just burn up all the air that you are trying to suck into your lungs, and it will burn up your lungs. And even though you are not charred or burned, you will die from the extreme heat almost instantly. Boom. Right there. Nothing you can do about it. Nothing you can do. So I am pretty sure that that's what happened when they opened the doors. By the way, I think that they opened the doors on the top of this furnace is what they did. This furnace, the doors were on the top. And you'll see that in just a second because of where Nebuchadnezzar is looking. The heat overcomes these warriors. Do you think Nebuchadnezzar had any conscious in his wildest imagination that the men, his most valiant warriors, who are going to tie up these men, he's sending them to their deaths? Do you think he has any idea that's what's fixing to happen? But these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell into the midst of the furnace of blazing fire, still tied up. That's not where I think that it's because of from the top, but they are thrown in and they go into it and they fall into it. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astounded and stood up in haste. And he responded and said to the king, to his officials, "Was it not three men we cast bound into the midst of the fire?" And they answered and said to the king, "Certainly, O king." And he answered and said, "Look, I see four men loosed and walking about in the midst of the fire without harm. And the appearance of the fourth is like a son of the gods." Nebuchadnezzar cannot believe what he is seeing. His soldiers, most valiant soldiers, have just died. They've gone ahead, and those men have been fallen into Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, have fallen into this fire, and they're not even hurt. And he looks and says, "Didn't we cast three in? I see four." It's right here. Well, I'm not quite ready for this picture, but I'll put it up in just a minute. There's a sad tragedy in our English translation. And even though our translators know that the translation is wrong because it's a very favorite passage, they have not changed it. Where it says, "The fourth is like the son of the gods." Pastors like to say that that was Jesus. That's not who it was. In fact, the translation, the Hebrew translation, should be this. It should say, "It looks like a divine angel," or it should say, "a divine person." Either way would be correct in the Hebrew. Instead, it says, "the son of the gods." Actually, Nebuchadnezzar himself, in verse 28, tells us what it is. You don't have to look down to verse 28. It's the black text in your first paragraph on page 21 of the notes. Nebuchadnezzar looks at the fourth person in the fire, in verse 28, of the same chapter, and says this, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servant." It's an angel. It is not the Son of God. It is an angel. Listen, it's a divine person. Yes, it is. It's an angel. That's a divine person. A single angel is all that was needed to rescue these three men out of that fiery furnace. Later on, many years later, a single angel is all that is needed to be sent to close the mouths of all the lions to protect Daniel in 536 B.C. All you need is one angel. You don't have to have a whole passel of them at all. No, you don't need a whole collection. You just need one. When they go to do the Lord's job, it just takes one. Just one. He's an angel. Angel is there. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the door of the furnace of blazing fire, and he responded and said, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, come out. Here's my picture. Don't you love that picture? Here's one of them trying to come out. There's another one there kind of back. Another one, and then you got a fourth one there that you can't see. I wish this was bigger. And then you got Nebuchadnezzar. Come on out. My question is what have they been waiting for? How come when they got thrown in immediately, they did not just get up and come on out? Why? I think it's probably because they were invited by the king to be thrown in, and they were waiting for the king to invite them out. Just to prove what Nebuchadnezzar is fixing to say. Look what he says. You servants of the Most High God, come here. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the midst of the fire. No other God could perform this except the Most High God. Oh, my goodness. They come out. Now, I'm like the rest of the officials who are around there. If I'd been there when Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had come out of that fire, I would have done exactly what the rest of the officials and Nebuchadnezzar did. And the satraps and the prefects and the governors and the king's high officials gathered around and saw in regard to these men that the fire had no effect on the bodies of these men, nor was the hair on their head singed, nor were their trousers damaged, nor had they the smell of fire even come upon them. I'd have been sniffing them out too, wouldn't you? The ropes had burned, but the stink of the ropes burning didn't get on them. How come? Why? Because the Most High God had done this. You see, the regular normal people were not there. This is just a thing amongst the officials. They all had leadership roles. They all need to learn a lesson. Nebuchadnezzar needed to learn a lesson also. Verse 28, Nebuchadnezzar responded and said, Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants who put their trust in him, violating the king's command, and yielded up their bodies so as not to serve or worship any god except their own God. I'm telling you, had they reasoned with Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar would have listened to them. But no, they violated the king's command. But what God and what Nebuchadnezzar meant for really evil upon them to kill them, God meant for good. Because Nebuchadnezzar's heart needed to be changed. He needed to know that there was a Most High God. Verse 29, Therefore I make a decree that any people, nation, or tongue that speaks anything offensive against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb from limb, and their houses shall be reduced to a rubbish heap, inasmuch as there is no other God who is able to deliver in this way. That must have been a favorite line of Nebuchadnezzar. You defy me, I'm going to tear you limb from limb and your household too. Because he said it back in chapter 1. You can't tell me, Chaldeans, about my dream, its interpretations. I'm going to have you torn limb from limb. And your house will be reduced to rubbish. Yeah, torn limb from limb. Well, Nebuchadnezzar does not go so far as to say that the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego is the only God. He just says they're the Most High God. He's the Most High God. There's no other God higher than the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Nebuchadnezzar is not willing yet to let go of his other gods, which we know now are no gods at all, because there is no God except for God. And yet, Nebuchadnezzar is on his path. He's on his journey to know this God. And then the unknown person who recorded this letter of Daniel, book of Daniel, tells us the rest of the story. For those of you who like the Paul Harvey rest of the story event, it's happened in chapter 1, it happened in chapter 2, and here it is again in chapter 3. Then the king caused Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to prosper in the province of Babylon. What does that mean? It means never again will anyone underneath Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego cause them problems. Never again will Nebuchadnezzar doubt the workings of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Nebuchadnezzar will bestow upon Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego wonderful blessings because they are three men that Shadrach can trust. And that's the rest of the story. Well, we'll pick up next week in chapter 4 and see if Nebuchadnezzar learns his lesson again. Lord Jesus, we thank you for this time together to come and worship you and to study your word and just to learn about the character of God. And also to learn how frail we are as just humans here on earth who believe in you, and yet we make mistakes. We make horrible mistakes. And sometimes we are extremely dysfunctional in our mistakes. And we feed each other with our mistakes. And we form alliances that are against you and make mistakes, just as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego did. And yet we try to do it with the right motives, and yet we do the right thing for the wrong reasons. And how bad that is. And we're all just on a learning curve here as we try to learn to be close to you and do what's right. And that's even a struggle for those of us who've lived many, many years still today. But Lord, you're still in control, and you can take everything that we've done wrong and you can use it for good. Thank you for that, Lord. In your name, amen.